Chapter 1, A Beginning and an End. This is what the past is for. Every experience God gives us, every person He puts in our lives, is the perfect preparation for a future only He can see. Corrie Ten Boom. August 2002. Patty, open your mouth! The nurse leaned over my frail, bandaged body as I lay on the hospital bed. Patty, open your mouth! You need to if you want to be strong. My mouth remained clamped shut, stubborn, frightened. You have to eat, Patty. Open your mouth. Everything the nurse said mattered, and it would have made sense to most people, just not to me. Having survived a horrific car crash, my brain was, in many ways, starting over. I had no thoughts, no memories, no feelings, no understanding of what was normal or real or what most people know or do naturally. All I could do was respond to each moment as it happened. Yet each moment I was struggling to survive. Still, by the grace of God, I had survived. It's hard, if not impossible, to explain what it was like waking up after suffering a traumatic brain injury that summer in 2002. Thoughts were the literal digestion of what I could see or hear or touch. I certainly didn't remember the harrowing event that put me in that hospital bed. If I could have made that clear to the nurse everyone called Joan of the Islands, who so wanted me to eat, I would have. But my brain was broken. I couldn't take the thoughts and put them in my mouth and make them come out in words, let alone sentences. I certainly didn't realize then that nothing in my life would ever be the same again. I was the victim of a horrible car crash, just coming out of a coma. As I lay in that bed at the Baylor Institute for Rehabilitation in Dallas, Texas, my body had only just begun its slow, cruel journey back to health. It had been 6 weeks since the crash that almost killed me. 6 weeks since that beautiful June day. A day of celebration. A day of laughter. A day of unthinkable tragedy. June 18th, 2002. Patty, we want you to speak at our conference. Had she really said it? Had I just heard the words I'd been waiting to hear for 2 years? I closed the cell phone, dazed, my heart thudding against my ribcage like stampeding cattle. Confirmed. I would be the keynote speaker at a ladies' retreat in North Carolina. After years of planning and preparing, my efforts to pursue a career as a motivational speaker were finally paying off. We instantly felt your vision matched our hearts, the women's ministry director for the retreat told me. God gave our whole team the peace of knowing you are the one to speak at our fall convention. Being the dreamer I am, I immediately started imagining the adventures ahead of me, jetting off to speak around the world, standing before church groups and corporations, talking about the things that matter most, like integrity, character, communication, and encouragement. I longed to teach and inspire my audiences to live their lives to the fullest, and now that dream was coming true. I had hoped for this day from my early years as a radio personality at two Christian stations in Tyler, Texas. My experience in radio taught me many things, like the importance of talking to people, not at them. I also learned how vital it is to take my time, focus my attention on one listener, and smile while I speak. Radio offered an opportunity to connect with and influence thousands of people on a regular basis, and eventually led me to a station in Indiana. I loved my work. A friend once said I would come alive when I was on the air. Whatever direction my life would take, though, was in God's more than capable hands. Gradually, I started getting more opportunities to be in front of a crowd, whether emceeing a concert or speaking at a church or community event on behalf of the radio station. As I did, my goals became more centered around becoming a full-time motivational speaker. So I started pursuing the possibilities. Finally, those efforts had paid off. Still reeling from the good news that I had a real come to our conference and speak gig, I got in my car to drive from Jacksonville to Tyler, a town just a few miles north of my home at that time. It seemed as if every song on the radio reflected the pure joy in my heart, and I couldn't keep from singing out loud. The day was off to a grand start. Arriving in Tyler, I had lunch with a few acquaintances, then drove back to Jacksonville to meet with one of my music students, an introverted young girl named Amanda, who loved to sing. I cherished the opportunity to put my music education degree to work as I watched Amanda's confidence grow. She threw her heart and soul into the Twyla Pyrrhus song, How Beautiful, while I accompanied her on the piano. Amanda would perform the song at her church the following Sunday, and I was proud of how hard she had worked and how far she had come. Not even the fierce East Texas sun could wilt my excitement as I finished the lesson, then hopped in my car and made my way to my parents' home in Jacksonville for dinner, anticipating their reaction to my news. My home, actually, as I was living with them until I got settled again, having recently moved back to Texas from Indiana. I chatted with Mother in the kitchen as we waited for Dad to get home. The king of good timing, he walked through the doorway just as Mother set a pot of Crowder peas and some cornbread on the table. "Looks good, Judy," he said as he simultaneously pulled out a chair, wiped sweat off his face with his T-shirt, and let out a long sigh. "This heat is wearing me down. I think it's making me more hungry." Dad laughed at his own joke as he piled a heap of peas on his plate. Mother groaned. "I agree," she said, smiling, "but that doesn't mean you should eat more." Fortunately, I knew just the topic to get our minds off the weather. As we sipped sweet iced tea and munched on cornbread and juicy cantaloupe, I told him about the ladies' retreat in North Carolina. Always two of my strongest supporters, Mother and Dad shared my elation over this new chapter in my life. The accomplishment was even more impressive since I would be speaking in another state, one where I didn't have a reputation as a local radio personality. "No one even knows my name there, yet," I said. "This is really big." After dinner, Dad headed to a friend's shop to work on his classic convertible Chevelle SS, while Mother started cleaning up. She wished me a nice evening as I hurried out the door to my weekly Bible study. It was our last session before taking a summer break. I planned to meet two other ladies at the parking lot of the First Baptist Church of Jacksonville so we could carpool to Tyler. Heather, always the first one to arrive, was practically jumping up and down when I pulled up, flashing her pearly whites as her long blonde hair floated around her face. "Hey, Patty!" she hollered, running up and throwing her arms around me as I stepped out of my car. "How have you been? I feel like I haven't seen you in forever." Before I could answer, Emily pulled up in her Chevy Tahoe and powered down her window. "Let's take my car," she offered, smiling and motioning for us to get in. "I just filled the tank." "Shotgun," Heather called, hopping into the front seat. I didn't argue, but grabbed the basket of flowers I had brought as a thank you gift for the ladies of the Bible study, set them down in the rear of the vehicle, and prepared for the half-hour drive back to Tyler. How could I have known my decision to put those flowers in the back would save my life? Spirits were high in the Tahoe that night. Good news seemed to be the order of the day. Emily had just discovered she was pregnant with her first child. A soft-spoken elementary school teacher with a big smile, she and her husband worked with the youth at First Baptist, loved kids, and were ready to start their own family. Heather had recently returned from her senior class trip to New York City. In fact, we had moved our typical Monday night gathering to Tuesday, so Heather and Emily, who had chaperoned the trip, could join us. Right before we reached the edge of the parking lot, another vehicle pulled in. It was Cindy. Since she hadn't been at the study for several weeks, we were surprised to see her tiny figure emerge from her Camaro. I rearranged my belongings to make room for her in the back seat. "Hi, guys," she said tentatively. She paused and shuffled her feet, as if waiting for a response. Without missing a beat, Emily smiled and said, "Hey, Cindy, good to see you. Grab a seat in the back. Cindy climbed in and we took off. It was already 6:30, so we knew we had to get going if we were going to make it to the Bible study by 7. At around the same time, another driver pulled onto the road, headed in the same direction. High on a cocktail of 5 different drugs and talking on a cell phone, he was behind the wheel of a Dodge Semi pulling a trailer piled with cars, and he was speeding. The moments before. We talked about music as we drove, a passion Heather and I shared. Heather had recently started taking voice lessons from me, which was how we met, and she was preparing a song to sing in church. She slid her new Rachel Lampa CD into the player as Emily asked, "Have you decided what you're going to sing?" Heather giggled. "Yep, it's on this CD, a song called My Father's Heart." "Why don't you sing it for us?" Emily suggested. "We'll be your audience and see if you remember the words." "Okay," she replied hesitantly, "but you've got to have some mercy on me." "Dill," Emily said as she winked and gave Heather's arm a squeeze. Heather scrolled through the CD until she came to the right track. Then her clear voice filled the SUV with lyrics that stay with me today. "Let everything that breathes praise you. The earth, the sky, the sea praise you. Just as nature shows to us your blessing, soon I find my heart confessing." After a verse or two, the rest of us joined in, playfully pointing out when she missed a note or got a lyric wrong. All the while, Heather kept glancing back at me as if to ask, "How am I doing? Do you approve?" With a nod and a smile, I let her know I definitely approved. We applauded as Heather finished her performance. She followed that up with a series of humorous stories from her senior trip. Between gestures and giggles that reverberated with excitement and energy, she shared details about her New York adventure, but hesitated when she got to her final night in the city. Emily laughed while Cindy and I begged for details. We finally coaxed the two travelers into unraveling the whole tale. "That last night," Emily began, "we decided to go to a drugstore to buy poster board." She giggled at our confused looks and continued, "We wanted to make a sign that said, 'Howdy from Texas,' because we were going to stand outside the Today Show and do some celebrity watching. It took us half the night to make that silly sign." Heather picked up the story there. "Then we had to get up at 4 a.m. so we could make it down to the set and get a good spot. Of course, all the girls called their parents," Emily added, "and told them to watch the show." "So, did you see any celebrities?" I asked. Heather and Emily gave each other a knowing look and shook their heads. Emily took a deep breath. "We waited as long as we could," she said, "but we had to get back to our hotel and pack. Our flight was leaving in less than 2 hours." I could tell that wasn't the whole story. I could also tell that Emily, only 24 at the time, didn't relish being the designated adult in that moment. "So," I prodded, "what happened?" "When we got back to the hotel, we found out we had missed him by 10 minutes. 10 minutes! Ugh, I still can't believe it." Emily glanced at Heather, who wrinkled her nose, equally disgusted. I looked at Cindy. They seemed to enjoy drawing out the suspense of the story a little too much. "Who?" Cindy and I asked in unison. Emily paused for effect, then answered solemnly, "Tom Cruise." "No way," I exclaimed, eyes wide. Heather nodded. "He walked right past where we had been standing with our sign. Can you imagine if we had just waited a few more minutes?" Her annoyance at being so near and yet so far, and the humor of the close encounter threw us all into a fit of laughter that didn't subside until there were tears in our eyes. Meanwhile, we had almost reached Tyler. Traffic was heavy that Tuesday as we traveled along Highway 69, and the Texas heat showed no sign of abating, even at nearly 7 p.m. The air was still, the sky clear, and the temperature hovered around 100. Only the cool blast from the Tahoe's air conditioning kept us from melting into a puddle on the floor mat. As Heather and Emily continued telling us about their off-the-wall escapades in the Big Apple, we pulled up to a stoplight at a main intersection. While we waited for a green light, I took off my seatbelt and turned around to check on the carnations in the back. The last thing I remember is seeing that bouquet of purple, pink, and yellow blossoms spilling out of the basket. In a split second, my world went black, and life as I knew it ended. Open your mouth. Everything the nurse said mattered, and it would have made sense to most people, just not to me. Having survived a horrific car crash, my brain was, in many ways, starting over. I had no thoughts, no memories, no feelings, no understanding of what was normal or real or what most people know or do naturally. All I could do was respond to each moment as it happened. Yet each moment I was struggling to survive. Still, by the grace of God, I had survived. It's hard, if not impossible, to explain what it was like waking up after suffering a traumatic brain injury that summer in 2002. Thoughts were the literal digestion of what I could see or hear or touch. I certainly didn't remember the harrowing event that put me in that hospital bed. If I could have made that clear to the nurse everyone called Joan of the Islands, who so wanted me to eat, I would have. But my brain was broken. I couldn't take the thoughts and put them in my mouth and make them come out in words, let alone sentences. I certainly didn't realize then that nothing in my life would ever be the same again. I was the victim of a horrible car crash, just coming out of a coma. As I lay in that bed at the Baylor Institute for Rehabilitation in Dallas, Texas, my body had only just begun its slow, cruel journey back to health. It had been 6 weeks since the crash that almost killed me. 6 weeks since that beautiful June day. A day of celebration. A day of laughter. A day of unthinkable tragedy. June 18th, 2002. Patty, we want you to speak at our conference. Had she really said it? Had I just heard the words I'd been waiting to hear for 2 years? I closed the cell phone, dazed, my heart thudding against my ribcage like stampeding cattle. Confirmed. I would be the keynote speaker at a ladies' retreat in North Carolina. After years of planning and preparing, my efforts to pursue a career as a motivational speaker were finally paying off. We instantly felt your vision matched our hearts, the women's ministry director for the retreat told me. God gave our whole team the peace of knowing you are the one to speak at our fall convention. Being the dreamer I am, I immediately started imagining the adventures ahead of me, jetting off to speak around the world, standing before church groups and corporations, talking about the things that matter most, like integrity, character, communication, and encouragement. I longed to teach and inspire my audiences to live their lives to the fullest, and now that dream was coming true. I had hoped for this day from my early years as a radio personality at two Christian stations in Tyler, Texas. My experience in radio taught me many things, like the importance of talking to people, not at them. I also learned how vital it is to take my time, focus my attention on one listener, and smile while I speak. Radio offered an opportunity to connect with and influence thousands of people on a regular basis and eventually led me to a station in Indiana. I loved my work. A friend once said I would come alive when I was on the air. Whatever direction my life would take, though, was in God's more than capable hands. Gradually, I started getting more opportunities to be in front of a crowd, whether emceeing a concert or speaking at a church or community event on behalf of the radio station. As I did, my goals became more centered around becoming a full-time motivational speaker. So, I started pursuing the possibilities. Finally, those efforts had paid off. Still reeling from the good news that I had a real come-to-our-conference-and-speak gig, I got in my car to drive from Jacksonville to Tyler, a town just a few miles north of my home at that time. It seemed as if every song on the radio reflected the pure joy in my heart, and I couldn't keep from singing out loud. The day was off to a grand start. Arriving in Tyler, I had lunch with a few acquaintances, then drove back to Jacksonville to meet with one of my music students, an introverted young girl named Amanda, who loved to sing. I cherished the opportunity to put my music education degree to work as I watched Amanda's confidence grow. She threw her heart and soul into the Twyla Paris song, How Beautiful, while I accompanied her on the piano. Amanda would perform the song at her church the following Sunday, and I was proud of how hard she had worked and how far she had come. Not even the fierce East Texas sun could wilt my excitement as I finished the lesson, then hopped in my car and made my way to my parents' home in Jacksonville for dinner, anticipating their reaction to my news. My home, actually, as I was living with them until I got settled again, having recently moved back to Texas from Indiana. I chatted with Mother in the kitchen as we waited for Dad to get home. The king of good timing, he walked through the doorway just as Mother set a pot of Crowder peas and some cornbread on the table. "Looks good, Judy," he said as he simultaneously pulled out a chair, wiped sweat off his face with his t-shirt, and let out a long sigh. "This heat is wearing me down. I think it's making me more hungry." Dad laughed at his own joke as he piled a heap of peas on his plate. Mother groaned. "I agree," she said, smiling, "but that doesn't mean you should eat more." Fortunately, I knew just the topic to get our minds off the weather. As we sipped sweet iced tea and munched on cornbread and juicy cantaloupe, I told him about the ladies' retreat in North Carolina. Always two of my strongest supporters, Mother and Dad shared my elation over this new chapter in my life. The accomplishment was even more impressive since I would be speaking in another state, one where I didn't have a reputation as a local radio personality. "No one even knows my name there, yet," I said. "This is really big." After dinner, Dad headed to a friend's shop to work on his classic convertible Chevelle SS, while Mother started cleaning up. She wished me a nice evening as I hurried out the door to my weekly Bible study. It was our last session before taking a summer break, and I planned to meet two other ladies at the parking lot of the First Baptist Church of Jacksonville so we could carpool to Tyler. Heather, always the first one to arrive, was practically jumping up and down when I pulled up, flashing her pearly whites as her long blonde hair floated around her face. "Hey, Patty!" she hollered, running up and throwing her arms around me as I stepped out of my car. "How have you been? I feel like I haven't seen you in forever." Before I could answer, Emily pulled up in her Chevy Tahoe and powered down her window. "Let's take my car," she offered, smiling and motioning for us to get in. "I just filled the tank." "Shotgun," Heather called, hopping into the front seat. I didn't argue, but grabbed the basket of flowers I had brought as a thank you gift for the ladies of the Bible study, set them down in the rear of the vehicle, and prepared for the half-hour drive back to Tyler. How could I have known my decision to put those flowers in the back would save my life? Spirits were high in the Tahoe that night. Good news seemed to be the order of the day. Emily had just discovered she was pregnant with her first child. A soft-spoken elementary school teacher with a big smile, she and her husband worked with the youth at First Baptist, loved kids, and were ready to start their own family. Heather had recently returned from her senior class trip to New York City. In fact, we had moved our typical Monday night gathering to Tuesday, so Heather and Emily, who had chaperoned the trip, could join us. Right before we reached the edge of the parking lot, another vehicle pulled in. It was Cindy. Since she hadn't been at the study for several weeks, we were surprised to see her tiny figure emerge from her Camaro. I rearranged my belongings to make room for her in the back seat. "Hi, guys," she said tentatively. She paused and shuffled her feet, as if waiting for a response. Without missing a beat, Emily smiled and said, "Hey, Cindy, good to see you. Grab a seat in the back." Cindy climbed in and we took off. It was already 6:30, so we knew we had to get going if we were going to make it to the Bible study by 7. At around the same time, another driver pulled onto the road, headed in the same direction. high on a cocktail of 5 different drugs, and talking on a cell phone. He was behind the wheel of a Dodge Semi pulling a trailer piled with cars, and he was speeding. The moments before. We talked about music as we drove, a passion Heather and I shared. Heather had recently started taking voice lessons from me, which was how we met, and she was preparing a song to sing in church. She slid her new Rachel Lampa CD into the player as Emily asked, "Have you decided what you're going to sing?" Heather giggled. "Yep, it's on this CD, a song called My Father's Heart." "Why don't you sing it for us?" Emily suggested. "We'll be your audience and see if you remember the words." "Okay," she replied hesitantly, "but you've got to have some mercy on me." "Dill," Emily said as she winked and gave Heather's arm a squeeze. Heather scrolled through the CD until she came to the right track. Then her clear voice filled the SUV with lyrics that stay with me today. "Let everything that breathes praise you. The earth, the sky, the sea praise you. Just as nature shows to us your blessing, soon I find my heart confessing." After a verse or two, the rest of us joined in, playfully pointing out when she missed a note or got a lyric wrong. All the while, Heather kept glancing back at me as if to ask, "How am I doing? Do you approve?" With a nod and a smile, I let her know I definitely approved. We applauded as Heather finished her performance. She followed that up with a series of humorous stories from her senior trip. Between gestures and giggles that reverberated with excitement and energy, she shared details about her New York adventure, but hesitated when she got to her final night in the city. Emily laughed while Cindy and I begged for details. We finally coaxed the two travelers into unraveling the whole tale. "That last night," Emily began, "we decided to go to a drugstore to buy poster board." She giggled at our confused looks and continued, "We wanted to make a sign that said, 'Howdy from Texas,' because we were going to stand outside the Today Show and do some celebrity watching. It took us half the night to make that silly sign." Heather picked up the story there. "Then we had to get up at 4 a.m. so we could make it down to the set and get a good spot." "Of course, all the girls called their parents," Emily added, "and told them to watch the show." "So, did you see any celebrities?" I asked. Heather and Emily gave each other a knowing look and shook their heads. Emily took a deep breath. "We waited as long as we could," she said, "but we had to get back to our hotel and pack. Our flight was leaving in less than 2 hours." I could tell that wasn't the whole story. I could also tell that Emily, only 24 at the time, didn't relish being the designated adult in that moment. "So," I prodded, "what happened?" "When we got back to the hotel, we found out we had missed him by 10 minutes. 10 minutes! Ugh, I still can't believe it." Emily glanced at Heather, who wrinkled her nose, equally disgusted. I looked at Cindy. They seemed to enjoy drawing out the suspense of the story a little too much. "Who?" Cindy and I asked in unison. Emily paused for effect, then answered solemnly, "Tom Cruise." "No way," I exclaimed, eyes wide. Heather nodded. "He walked right past where we had been standing with our sign. Can you imagine if we had just waited a few more minutes?" Her annoyance at being so near and yet so far, and the humor of the close encounter threw us all into a fit of laughter that didn't subside until there were tears in our eyes. Meanwhile, we had almost reached Tyler. Traffic was heavy that Tuesday as we traveled along Highway 69, and the Texas heat showed no sign of abating, even at nearly 7 p.m. The air was still, the sky clear, and the temperature hovered around 100. Only the cool blast from the Tahoe's air conditioning kept us from melting into a puddle on the floor mat. As Heather and Emily continued telling us about their off-the-wall escapades in the Big Apple, we pulled up to a stoplight at a main intersection. While we waited for a green light, I took off my seatbelt and turned around to check on the carnations in the back. The last thing I remember is seeing that bouquet of purple, pink, and yellow blossoms spilling out of the basket. In a split second, my world went black, and life as I knew it ended. Her mouth. Everything the nurse said mattered, and it would have made sense to most people, just not to me. Having survived a horrific car crash, my brain was, in many ways, starting over. I had no thoughts, no memories, no feelings, no understanding of what was normal or real or what most people know or do naturally. All I could do was respond to each moment as it happened. Yet each moment I was struggling to survive. Still, by the grace of God, I had survived. It's hard, if not impossible, to explain what it was like waking up after suffering a traumatic brain injury that summer in 2002. Thoughts were the literal digestion of what I could see or hear or touch. I certainly didn't remember the harrowing event that put me in that hospital bed. If I could have made that clear to the nurse everyone called Joan of the Islands, who so wanted me to eat, I would have. But my brain was broken. I couldn't take the thoughts and put them in my mouth and make them come out in words, let alone sentences. I certainly didn't realize then that nothing in my life would ever be the same again. I was the victim of a horrible car crash, just coming out of a coma. As I lay in that bed at the Baylor Institute for Rehabilitation in Dallas, Texas, my body had only just begun its slow, cruel journey back to health. It had been 6 weeks since the crash that almost killed me. 6 weeks since that beautiful June day. A day of celebration. A day of laughter. A day of unthinkable tragedy. June 18th, 2002. Patty, we want you to speak at our conference. Had she really said it? Had I just heard the words I'd been waiting to hear for 2 years? I closed the cell phone, dazed, my heart thudding against my ribcage like stampeding cattle. Confirmed. I would be the keynote speaker at a ladies' retreat in North Carolina. After years of planning and preparing, my efforts to pursue a career as a motivational speaker were finally paying off. We instantly felt your vision matched our hearts, the women's ministry director for the retreat told me. God gave our whole team the peace of knowing you are the one to speak at our fall convention. Being the dreamer I am, I immediately started imagining the adventures ahead of me, jetting off to speak around the world, standing before church groups and corporations, talking about the things that matter most, like integrity, character, communication, and encouragement. I longed to teach and inspire my audiences to live their lives to the fullest, and now that dream was coming true. I had hoped for this day from my early years as a radio personality at two Christian stations in Tyler, Texas. My experience in radio taught me many things, like the importance of talking to people, not at them. I also learned how vital it is to take my time, focus my attention on one listener, and smile while I speak. Radio offered an opportunity to connect with and influence thousands of people on a regular basis, and eventually led me to a station in Indiana. I loved my work. A friend once said, I would come alive when I was on the air. Whatever direction my life would take, though, was in God's more than capable hands. Gradually, I started getting more opportunities to be in front of a crowd, whether emceeing a concert or speaking at a church or community event on behalf of the radio station. As I did, my goals became more centered around becoming a full-time motivational speaker. So, I started pursuing the possibilities. Finally, those efforts had paid off. Still reeling from the good news that I had a real come-to-our-conference-and-speak gig, I got in my car to drive from Jacksonville to Tyler, a town just a few miles north of my home at that time. It seemed as if every song on the radio reflected the pure joy in my heart, and I couldn't keep from singing out loud. The day was off to a grand start. Arriving in Tyler, I had lunch with a few acquaintances. then drove back to Jacksonville to meet with one of my music students, an introverted young girl named Amanda, who loved to sing. I cherished the opportunity to put my music education degree to work as I watched Amanda's confidence grow. She threw her heart and soul into the Twyla Pyrrhus song, How Beautiful, while I accompanied her on the piano. Amanda would perform the song at her church the following Sunday, and I was proud of how hard she had worked and how far she had come. Not even the fierce East Texas sun could wilt my excitement as I finished the lesson, then hopped in my car and made my way to my parents' home in Jacksonville for dinner, anticipating their reaction to my news. My home, actually, as I was living with them until I got settled again, having recently moved back to Texas from Indiana. I chatted with Mother in the kitchen as we waited for Dad to get home. The king of good timing, he walked through the doorway just as Mother set a pot of Crowder peas and some cornbread on the table. "Looks good, Judy," he said as he simultaneously pulled out a chair, wiped sweat off his face with his t-shirt, and let out a long sigh. "This heat is wearing me down. I think it's making me more hungry." Dad laughed at his own joke as he piled a heap of peas on his plate. Mother groaned. "I agree," she said, smiling, "but that doesn't mean you should eat more." Fortunately, I knew just the topic to get our minds off the weather. As we sipped sweet iced tea and munched on cornbread and juicy cantaloupe, I told him about the ladies' retreat in North Carolina. Always two of my strongest supporters, Mother and Dad shared my elation over this new chapter in my life. The accomplishment was even more impressive since I would be speaking in another state, one where I didn't have a reputation as a local radio personality. "No one even knows my name there, yet," I said. "This is really big." After dinner, Dad headed to a friend's shop to work on his classic convertible Chevelle SS, while Mother started cleaning up. She wished me a nice evening as I hurried out the door to my weekly Bible study. It was our last session before taking a summer break, and I planned to meet two other ladies at the parking lot of the First Baptist Church of Jacksonville so we could carpool to Tyler. Heather, always the first one to arrive, was practically jumping up and down when I pulled up, flashing her pearly whites as her long blonde hair floated around her face. "Hey, Patty!" she hollered, running up and throwing her arms around me as I stepped out of my car. "How have you been? I feel like I haven't seen you in forever." Before I could answer, Emily pulled up in her Chevy Tahoe and powered down her window. "Let's take my car," she offered, smiling and motioning for us to get in. "I just filled the tank." "Shotgun!" Heather called, hopping into the front seat. I didn't argue, but grabbed the basket of flowers I had brought as a thank you gift for the ladies of the Bible study, set them down in the rear of the vehicle, and prepared for the half-hour drive back to Tyler. How could I have known my decision to put those flowers in the back would save my life? Spirits were high in the Tahoe that night. Good news seemed to be the order of the day. Emily had just discovered she was pregnant with her first child. A soft-spoken elementary school teacher with a big smile, she and her husband worked with the youth at First Baptist, loved kids, and were ready to start their own family. Heather had recently returned from her senior class trip to New York City. In fact, we had moved our typical Monday night gathering to Tuesday, so Heather and Emily, who had chaperoned the trip, could join us. Right before we reached the edge of the parking lot, another vehicle pulled in. It was Cindy. Since she hadn't been at the study for several weeks, we were surprised to see her tiny figure emerge from her Camaro. I rearranged my belongings to make room for her in the back seat. "Hi, guys," she said tentatively. She paused and shuffled her feet, as if waiting for a response. Without missing a beat, Emily smiled and said, "Hey, Cindy, good to see you. Grab a seat in the back." Cindy climbed in and we took off. It was already 6:30, so we knew we had to get going if we were going to make it to the Bible study by 7. At around the same time, another driver pulled onto the road, headed in the same direction. High on a cocktail of 5 different drugs and talking on a cell phone, he was behind the wheel of a Dodge Semi pulling a trailer piled with cars, and he was speeding. The moments before. We talked about music as we drove, a passion Heather and I shared. Heather had recently started taking voice lessons from me, which was how we met, and she was preparing a song to sing in church. She slid her new Rachel Lampa CD into the player as Emily asked, "Have you decided what you're going to sing?" Heather giggled. "Yep, it's on this CD, a song called My Father's Heart." "Why don't you sing it for us?" Emily suggested. "We'll be your audience and see if you remember the words." "Okay," she replied hesitantly, "but you've got to have some mercy on me." "Dill," Emily said as she winked and gave Heather's arm a squeeze. Heather scrolled through the CD until she came to the right track. Then her clear voice filled the SUV with lyrics that stay with me today. "Let everything that breathes praise you. The earth, the sky, the sea praise you. Just as nature shows to us your blessing, soon I find my heart confessing." After a verse or two, the rest of us joined in, playfully pointing out when she missed a note or got a lyric wrong. All the while, Heather kept glancing back at me as if to ask, "How am I doing? Do you approve?" With a nod and a smile, I let her know I definitely approved. We applauded as Heather finished her performance. She followed that up with a series of humorous stories from her senior trip. Between gestures and giggles that reverberated with excitement and energy, she shared details about her New York adventure, but hesitated when she got to her final night in the city. Emily laughed while Cindy and I begged for details. We finally coaxed the two travelers into unraveling the whole tale. "That last night," Emily began, "we decided to go to a drugstore to buy poster board." She giggled at our confused looks and continued, "We wanted to make a sign that said, 'Howdy from Texas,' because we were going to stand outside the Today Show and do some celebrity watching. It took us half the night to make that silly sign." Heather picked up the story there. "Then, we had to get up at 4 a.m. so we could make it down to the set and get a good spot." "Of course, all the girls called their parents," Emily added, "and told them to watch the show." "So, did you see any celebrities?" I asked. Heather and Emily gave each other a knowing look and shook their heads. Emily took a deep breath. "We waited as long as we could," she said. "But we had to get back to our hotel and pack. Our flight was leaving in less than 2 hours." I could tell that wasn't the whole story. I could also tell that Emily, only 24 at the time, didn't relish being the designated adult in that moment. "So," I prodded, "what happened?" "When we got back to the hotel, we found out we had missed him by 10 minutes. 10 minutes! Ugh, I still can't believe it." Emily glanced at Heather, who wrinkled her nose, equally disgusted. I looked at Cindy. They seemed to enjoy drawing out the suspense of the story a little too much. "Who?" Cindy and I asked in unison. Emily paused for effect, then answered solemnly, "Tom Cruise." "No way," I exclaimed, eyes wide. Heather nodded. "He walked right past where we had been standing with our sign. Can you imagine if we had just waited a few more minutes?" Her annoyance at being so near and yet so far, and the humor of the close encounter threw us all into a fit of laughter that didn't subside until there were tears in our eyes. Meanwhile, we had almost reached Tyler. Traffic was heavy that Tuesday as we traveled along Highway 69, and the Texas heat showed no sign of abating, even at nearly 7 p.m. The air was still, the sky clear, and the temperature hovered around 100. Only the cool blast from the Tahoe's air conditioning kept us from melting into a puddle on the floor mat. As Heather and Emily continued telling us about their off-the-wall escapades in the Big Apple, we pulled up to a stoplight at a main intersection. While we waited for a green light, I took off my seatbelt and turned around to check on the carnations in the back. The last thing I remember is seeing that bouquet of purple, pink, and yellow blossoms spilling out of the basket. In a split second, my world went black, and life as I knew it ended. Everything the nurse said mattered. and it would have made sense to most people, just not to me. Having survived a horrific car crash, my brain was, in many ways, starting over. I had no thoughts, no memories, no feelings, no understanding of what was normal or real or what most people know or do naturally. All I could do was respond to each moment as it happened. Yet each moment I was struggling to survive. Still, by the grace of God, I had survived. It's hard, if not impossible, to explain what it was like waking up after suffering a traumatic brain injury that summer in 2002. Thoughts were the literal digestion of what I could see or hear or touch. I certainly didn't remember the harrowing event that put me in that hospital bed. If I could have made that clear to the nurse everyone called Joan of the Islands, who so wanted me to eat, I would have. But my brain was broken. I couldn't take the thoughts and put them in my mouth and make them come out in words, let alone sentences. I certainly didn't realize then that nothing in my life would ever be the same again. I was the victim of a horrible car crash, just coming out of a coma. As I lay in that bed at the Baylor Institute for Rehabilitation in Dallas, Texas, my body had only just begun its slow, cruel journey back to health. It had been 6 weeks since the crash that almost killed me. 6 weeks since that beautiful June day. A day of celebration. A day of laughter. A day of unthinkable tragedy. June 18th, 2002. Patty, we want you to speak at our conference. Had she really said it? Had I just heard the words I'd been waiting to hear for 2 years? I closed the cell phone, dazed, my heart thudding against my ribcage like stampeding cattle. Confirmed. I would be the keynote speaker at a ladies' retreat in North Carolina. After years of planning and preparing, my efforts to pursue a career as a motivational speaker were finally paying off. We instantly felt your vision matched our hearts, the women's ministry director for the retreat told me. God gave our whole team the peace of knowing you are the one to speak at our fall convention. Being the dreamer I am, I immediately started imagining the adventures ahead of me, jetting off to speak around the world, standing before church groups and corporations, talking about the things that matter most, like integrity, character, communication, and encouragement. I longed to teach and inspire my audiences to live their lives to the fullest, and now that dream was coming true. I had hoped for this day from my early years as a radio personality at two Christian stations in Tyler, Texas. My experience in radio taught me many things, like the importance of talking to people, not at them. I also learned how vital it is to take my time, focus my attention on one listener, and smile while I speak. Radio offered an opportunity to connect with and influence thousands of people on a regular basis, and eventually led me to a station in Indiana. I loved my work. A friend once said I would come alive when I was on the air. Whatever direction my life would take, though, was in God's more than capable hands. Gradually, I started getting more opportunities to be in front of a crowd, whether emceeing a concert or speaking at a church or community event on behalf of the radio station. As I did, my goals became more centered around becoming a full-time motivational speaker. So, I started pursuing the possibilities. Finally, those efforts had paid off. Still reeling from the good news that I had a real come-to-our-conference-and-speak gig, I got in my car to drive from Jacksonville to Tyler, a town just a few miles north of my home at that time. It seemed as if every song on the radio reflected the pure joy in my heart, and I couldn't keep from singing out loud. The day was off to a grand start. Arriving in Tyler, I had lunch with a few acquaintances, then drove back to Jacksonville to meet with one of my music students, an introverted young girl named Amanda, who loved to sing. I cherished the opportunity to put my music education degree to work as I watched Amanda's confidence grow. She threw her heart and soul into the Twyla Paris song, How Beautiful, while I accompanied her on the piano. Amanda would perform the song at her church the following Sunday, and I was proud of how hard she had worked and how far she had come. Not even the fierce East Texas sun could wilt my excitement as I finished the lesson, then hopped in my car and made my way to my parents' home in Jacksonville for dinner, anticipating their reaction to my news. My home, actually, as I was living with them until I got settled again, having recently moved back to Texas from Indiana. I chatted with Mother in the kitchen as we waited for Dad to get home. The king of good timing, he walked through the doorway just as Mother set a pot of Crowder peas and some cornbread on the table. "Looks good, Judy," he said as he simultaneously pulled out a chair, wiped sweat off his face with his t-shirt, and let out a long sigh. "This heat is wearing me down. I think it's making me more hungry." Dad laughed at his own joke as he piled a heap of peas on his plate. Mother groaned. "I agree," she said, smiling, "but that doesn't mean you should eat more." Fortunately, I knew just the topic to get our minds off the weather. As we sipped sweet iced tea and munched on cornbread and juicy cantaloupe, I told him about the ladies' retreat in North Carolina. Always two of my strongest supporters, Mother and Dad shared my elation over this new chapter in my life. The accomplishment was even more impressive since I would be speaking in another state, one where I didn't have a reputation as a local radio personality. "No one even knows my name there, yet," I said. "This is really big." After dinner, Dad headed to a friend's shop to work on his classic convertible Chevelle SS, while Mother started cleaning up. She wished me a nice evening as I hurried out the door to my weekly Bible study. It was our last session before taking a summer break, and I planned to meet two other ladies at the parking lot of the First Baptist Church of Jacksonville so we could carpool to Tyler. Heather, always the first one to arrive, was practically jumping up and down when I pulled up, flashing her pearly whites as her long blonde hair floated around her face. "Hey, Patty," she hollered, running up and throwing her arms around me as I stepped out of my car. "How have you been? I feel like I haven't seen you in forever." Before I could answer, Emily pulled up in her Chevy Tahoe and powered down her window. "Let's take my car," she offered, smiling and motioning for us to get in. "I just filled the tank." "Shotgun," Heather called, hopping into the front seat. I didn't argue, but grabbed the basket of flowers I had brought as a thank you gift for the ladies of the Bible study, set them down in the rear of the vehicle, and prepared for the half-hour drive back to Tyler. How could I have known my decision to put those flowers in the back would save my life? Spirits were high in the Tahoe that night. Good news seemed to be the order of the day. Emily had just discovered she was pregnant with her first child. A soft-spoken elementary school teacher with a big smile, she and her husband worked with the youth at First Baptist, loved kids, and were ready to start their own family. Heather had recently returned from her senior class trip to New York City. In fact, we had moved our typical Monday night gathering to Tuesday, so Heather and Emily, who had chaperoned the trip, could join us. Right before we reached the edge of the parking lot, another vehicle pulled in. It was Cindy. Since she hadn't been at the study for several weeks, we were surprised to see her tiny figure emerge from her Camaro. I rearranged my belongings to make room for her in the back seat. "Hi, guys," she said tentatively. She paused and shuffled her feet, as if waiting for a response. Without missing a beat, Emily smiled and said, "Hey, Cindy, good to see you. Grab a seat in the back." Cindy climbed in and we took off. It was already 6:30, so we knew we had to get going if we were going to make it to the Bible study by 7. At around the same time, another driver pulled onto the road, headed in the same direction. High on a cocktail of 5 different drugs and talking on a cell phone, he was behind the wheel of a Dodge Semi pulling a trailer piled with cars, and he was speeding. The moments before. We talked about music as we drove, a passion Heather and I shared. Heather had recently started taking voice lessons from me, which was how we met, and she was preparing a song to sing in church. She slid her new Rachel Lampa CD into the player as Emily asked, "Have you decided what you're going to sing?" Heather giggled. "Yep, it's on this CD, a song called My Father's Heart." Why don't you sing it for us? Emily suggested. We'll be your audience and see if you remember the words. Okay, she replied hesitantly, but you've got to have some mercy on me. Dill, Emily said as she winked and gave Heather's arm a squeeze. Heather scrolled through the CD until she came to the right track. Then her clear voice filled the SUV with lyrics that stay with me today. Let everything that breathes praise you. The earth, the sky, the sea praise you. Just as nature shows to us your blessing, soon I find my heart confessing. After a verse or two, the rest of us joined in, playfully pointing out when she missed a note or got a lyric wrong. All the while, Heather kept glancing back at me as if to ask, "How am I doing? Do you approve?" With a nod and a smile, I let her know I definitely approved. We applauded as Heather finished her performance. She followed that up with a series of humorous stories from her senior trip. Between gestures and giggles that reverberated with excitement and energy, she shared details about her New York adventure, but hesitated when she got to her final night in the city. Emily laughed while Cindy and I begged for details. We finally coaxed the two travelers into unraveling the whole tale. "That last night," Emily began, "we decided to go to a drugstore to buy poster board." She giggled at our confused looks and continued. "We wanted to make a sign that said, 'Howdy from Texas,' because we were going to stand outside the Today Show and do some celebrity watching. It took us half the night to make that silly sign." Heather picked up the story there. "Then we had to get up at 4 a.m. so we could make it down to the set and get a good spot. Of course, all the girls called their parents," Emily added, "and told them to watch the show." "So, did you see any celebrities?" I asked. Heather and Emily gave each other a knowing look and shook their heads. Emily took a deep breath. "We waited as long as we could," she said. "But we had to get back to our hotel and pack. Our flight was leaving in less than 2 hours." I could tell that wasn't the whole story. I could also tell that Emily, only 24 at the time, didn't relish being the designated adult in that moment. "So," I prodded, "what happened?" "When we got back to the hotel, we found out we had missed him by 10 minutes. 10 minutes! Ugh, I still can't believe it." Emily glanced at Heather, who wrinkled her nose, equally disgusted. I looked at Cindy. They seemed to enjoy drawing out the suspense of the story a little too much. "Who?" Cindy and I asked in unison. Emily paused for effect, then answered solemnly, "Tom Cruise." "No way," I exclaimed, eyes wide. Heather nodded. "He walked right past where we had been standing with our sign. Can you imagine if we had just waited a few more minutes?" Her annoyance at being so near and yet so far, and the humor of the close encounter threw us all into a fit of laughter that didn't subside until there were tears in our eyes. Meanwhile, we had almost reached Tyler. Traffic was heavy that Tuesday as we traveled along Highway 69, and the Texas heat showed no sign of abating, even at nearly 7 p.m. The air was still, the sky clear, and the temperature hovered around 100. Only the cool blast from the Tahoe's air conditioning kept us from melting into a puddle on the floor mat. As Heather and Emily continued telling us about their off-the-wall escapades in the Big Apple, we pulled up to a stoplight at a main intersection. While we waited for a green light, I took off my seatbelt and turned around to check on the carnations in the back. The last thing I remember is seeing that bouquet of purple, pink, and yellow blossoms spilling out of the basket. In a split second, my world went black, and life as I knew it ended. Your mouth. Everything the nurse said mattered, and it would have made sense to most people, just not to me. Having survived a horrific car crash, my brain was, in many ways, starting over. I had no thoughts, no memories, no feelings, no understanding of what was normal or real or what most people know or do naturally. All I could do was respond to each moment as it happened. Yet each moment I was struggling to survive. Still, by the grace of God, I had survived. It's hard, if not impossible, to explain what it was like waking up after suffering a traumatic brain injury that summer in 2002. Thoughts were the literal digestion of what I could see or hear or touch. I certainly didn't remember the harrowing event that put me in that hospital bed. If I could have made that clear to the nurse everyone called Joan of the Islands, who so wanted me to eat, I would have. But my brain was broken. I couldn't take the thoughts and put them in my mouth and make them come out in words, let alone sentences. I certainly didn't realize then that nothing in my life would ever be the same again. I was the victim of a horrible car crash, just coming out of a coma. As I lay in that bed at the Baylor Institute for Rehabilitation in Dallas, Texas, my body had only just begun its slow, cruel journey back to health. It had been 6 weeks since the crash that almost killed me. 6 weeks since that beautiful June day. A day of celebration. A day of laughter. A day of unthinkable tragedy. June 18th, 2002. Patty, we want you to speak at our conference. Had she really said it? Had I just heard the words I'd been waiting to hear for 2 years? I closed the cell phone, dazed, my heart thudding against my ribcage like stampeding cattle. Confirmed. I would be the keynote speaker at a ladies' retreat in North Carolina. After years of planning and preparing, my efforts to pursue a career as a motivational speaker were finally paying off. We instantly felt your vision matched our hearts, the women's ministry director for the retreat told me. God gave our whole team the peace of knowing you are the one to speak at our fall convention. Being the dreamer I am, I immediately started imagining the adventures ahead of me, jetting off to speak around the world, standing before church groups and corporations, talking about the things that matter most, like integrity, character, communication, and encouragement. I longed to teach and inspire my audiences to live their lives to the fullest, and now that dream was coming true. I had hoped for this day from my early years as a radio personality at two Christian stations in Tyler, Texas. My experience in radio taught me many things, like the importance of talking to people, not at them. I also learned how vital it is to take my time, focus my attention on one listener, and smile while I speak. Radio offered an opportunity to connect with and influence thousands of people on a regular basis, and eventually led me to a station in Indiana. I loved my work. A friend once said I would come alive when I was on the air. Whatever direction my life would take, though, was in God's more than capable hands. Gradually, I started getting more opportunities to be in front of a crowd, whether emceeing a concert or speaking at a church or community event on behalf of the radio station. As I did, my goals became more centered around becoming a full-time motivational speaker. So, I started pursuing the possibilities. Finally, those efforts had paid off. Still reeling from the good news that I had a real come-to-our-conference-and-speak gig, I got in my car to drive from Jacksonville to Tyler, a town just a few miles north of my home at that time. It seemed as if every song on the radio reflected the pure joy in my heart, and I couldn't keep from singing out loud. The day was off to a grand start. Arriving in Tyler, I had lunch with a few acquaintances, then drove back to Jacksonville to meet with one of my music students, an introverted young girl named Amanda, who loved to sing. I cherished the opportunity to put my music education degree to work as I watched Amanda's confidence grow. She threw her heart and soul into the Twyla Paris song, How Beautiful, while I accompanied her on the piano. Amanda would perform the song at her church the following Sunday, and I was proud of how hard she had worked and how far she had come. Not even the fierce East Texas sun could wilt my excitement as I finished the lesson, then hopped in my car and made my way to my parents' home in Jacksonville for dinner anticipating their reaction to my news. My home, actually, as I was living with them until I got settled again, having recently moved back to Texas from Indiana. I chatted with Mother in the kitchen as we waited for Dad to get home. The king of good timing, he walked through the doorway just as Mother set a pot of Crowder peas and some cornbread on the table. "Looks good, Judy," he said as he simultaneously pulled out a chair, wiped sweat off his face with his t-shirt, and let out a long sigh. "This heat is wearing me down. I think it's making me more hungry." Dad laughed at his own joke as he piled a heap of peas on his plate. Mother groaned. "I agree," she said, smiling, "but that doesn't mean you should eat more." Fortunately, I knew just the topic to get our minds off the weather. As we sipped sweet iced tea and munched on cornbread and juicy cantaloupe, I told him about the ladies' retreat in North Carolina. Always two of my strongest supporters, Mother and Dad shared my elation over this new chapter in my life. The accomplishment was even more impressive since I would be speaking in another state, one where I didn't have a reputation as a local radio personality. "No one even knows my name there, yet," I said. "This is really big." After dinner, Dad headed to a friend's shop to work on his classic convertible Chevelle SS, while Mother started cleaning up. She wished me a nice evening as I hurried out the door to my weekly Bible study. It was our last session before taking a summer break, and I planned to meet two other ladies at the parking lot of the First Baptist Church of Jacksonville so we could carpool to Tyler. Heather, always the first one to arrive, was practically jumping up and down when I pulled up, flashing her pearly whites as her long blonde hair floated around her face. "Hey, Patty!" she hollered, running up and throwing her arms around me as I stepped out of my car. "How have you been? I feel like I haven't seen you in forever." Before I could answer, Emily pulled up in her Chevy Tahoe and powered down her window. "Let's take my car," she offered, smiling and motioning for us to get in. "I just filled the tank." "Shotgun!" Heather called, hopping into the front seat. I didn't argue, but grabbed the basket of flowers I had brought as a thank you gift for the ladies of the Bible study, set them down in the rear of the vehicle, and prepared for the half-hour drive back to Tyler. How could I have known my decision to put those flowers in the back would save my life? Spirits were high in the Tahoe that night. Good news seemed to be the order of the day. Emily had just discovered she was pregnant with her first child. A soft-spoken elementary school teacher with a big smile, she and her husband worked with the youth at First Baptist, loved kids, and were ready to start their own family. Heather had recently returned from her senior class trip to New York City. In fact, we had moved our typical Monday night gathering to Tuesday, so Heather and Emily, who had chaperoned the trip, could join us. Right before we reached the edge of the parking lot, another vehicle pulled in. It was Cindy. Since she hadn't been at the study for several weeks, we were surprised to see her tiny figure emerge from her Camaro. I rearranged my belongings to make room for her in the back seat. "Hi, guys," she said tentatively. She paused and shuffled her feet, as if waiting for a response. Without missing a beat, Emily smiled and said, "Hey, Cindy, good to see you. Grab a seat in the back." Cindy climbed in and we took off. It was already 6:30, so we knew we had to get going if we were going to make it to the Bible study by 7. At around the same time, another driver pulled onto the road, headed in the same direction. High on a cocktail of 5 different drugs and talking on a cell phone, he was behind the wheel of a Dodge Semi pulling a trailer piled with cars, and he was speeding. The moments before. We talked about music as we drove, a passion Heather and I shared. Heather had recently started taking voice lessons from me, which was how we met, and she was preparing a song to sing in church. She slid her new Rachel Lampa CD into the player as Emily asked, "Have you decided what you're going to sing?" Heather giggled. "Yep, it's on this CD, a song called My Father's Heart." "Why don't you sing it for us?" Emily suggested. "We'll be your audience and see if you remember the words." "Okay," she replied hesitantly, "but you've got to have some mercy on me." "Dill," Emily said as she winked and gave Heather's arm a squeeze. Heather scrolled through the CD until she came to the right track. Then her clear voice filled the SUV with lyrics that stay with me today. Let everything that breathes praise you. The earth, the sky, the sea praise you. Just as nature shows to us your blessing, soon I find my heart confessing. After a verse or two, the rest of us joined in, playfully pointing out when she missed a note or got a lyric wrong. All the while, Heather kept glancing back at me as if to ask, "How am I doing? Do you approve?" With a nod and a smile, I let her know I definitely approved. We applauded as Heather finished her performance. She followed that up with a series of humorous stories from her senior trip. Between gestures and giggles that reverberated with excitement and energy, she shared details about her New York adventure, but hesitated when she got to her final night in the city. Emily laughed while Cindy and I begged for details. We finally coaxed the two travelers into unraveling the whole tale. "That last night," Emily began, "we decided to go to a drugstore to buy poster board." She giggled at our confused looks and continued, "We wanted to make a sign that said, 'Howdy from Texas,' because we were going to stand outside the Today Show and do some celebrity watching. It took us half the night to make that silly sign." Heather picked up the story there. "Then we had to get up at 4 a.m. so we could make it down to the set and get a good spot. Of course, all the girls called their parents," Emily added, "and told them to watch the show." "So, did you see any celebrities?" I asked. Heather and Emily gave each other a knowing look and shook their heads. Emily took a deep breath. "We waited as long as we could," she said. "But we had to get back to our hotel and pack. Our flight was leaving in less than 2 hours." I could tell that wasn't the whole story. I could also tell that Emily, only 24 at the time, didn't relish being the designated adult in that moment. "So," I prodded, "what happened?" "When we got back to the hotel, we found out we had missed him by 10 minutes. 10 minutes! Ugh, I still can't believe it." Emily glanced at Heather, who wrinkled her nose, equally disgusted. I looked at Cindy. They seemed to enjoy drawing out the suspense of the story a little too much. "Who?" Cindy and I asked in unison. Emily paused for effect, then answered solemnly, "Tom Cruise." "No way," I exclaimed, eyes wide. Heather nodded. "He walked right past where we had been standing with our sign. Can you imagine if we had just waited a few more minutes?" Her annoyance at being so near and yet so far, and the humor of the close encounter threw us all into a fit of laughter that didn't subside until there were tears in our eyes. Meanwhile, we had almost reached Tyler. Traffic was heavy that Tuesday as we traveled along Highway 69, and the Texas heat showed no sign of abating, even at nearly 7 p.m. The air was still, the sky clear, and the temperature hovered around 100. Only the cool blast from the Tahoe's air conditioning kept us from melting into a puddle on the floor mat. As Heather and Emily continued telling us about their off-the-wall escapades in the Big Apple, we pulled up to a stoplight at a main intersection. While we waited for a green light, I took off my seatbelt and turned around to check on the carnations in the back. The last thing I remember is seeing that bouquet of purple, pink, and yellow blossoms spilling out of the basket. In a split second, my world went black, and life as I knew it ended.